Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A, as he does every Wednesday. He's NPR's political editor and our own political junkie. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
And let's start today with the news of Fred Thompson. He hasn't formally announced, but he's all but in the race.
Well, nobody formally announces anymore. They announce that they're going to announce, or they announce that they're thinking about announcing when they do announce. Actually, the announcement today is that Fred Thompson will have an exploratory committee on Monday, and that allows him to raise funds and assemble a campaign staff and organizations around the states. But there is a growing, you know, need, apparently, for another candidate, even though there are already 10 Republicans in the field. Some conservatives, many conservatives, say that the right candidate, the Reagan-like candidate is still not there, not John McCain, not Mitt Romney, not Rudy Giuliani, not the others. And so there's a lot of hunger for another candidate, and that being Fred Thompson.
Here's an email question from Daniel in Hyannis, Massachusetts. What is the Fred Thompson's benefit for joining the presidential race at this stage versus earlier, like the other candidates? My feeling is that he's joining now after examining the strengths and weaknesses of the other candidates and organizing his campaign accordingly, or could there be other more pertinent reasons?
No, I think that's exactly right. I mean, first of all, he initially started off as a John McCain supporter. He supported McCain when he ran in 2000 and was preparing to support him again in 2008, but there's some stalling of the McCain campaign. He has not raised the amount of money he would have liked. He's not doing as well in the polls as he'd like. In many individual state polls, mm-hmm. you see him trailing considerably double digits to Rudy Giuliani and other hopefuls. So Thompson's looking in the field. A lot of conservatives are saying that there's a lot of it's a weak Republican field. They need somebody who could unite the party, both on economic grounds, ideological grounds, you know, social conservatives, economic conservatives, and Thompson's the guy to do it.
It's also that, he's been anticipated as throwing his hat into the ring for some time now, and then gave a speech that everybody was looking forward to. This might be, the guy's an actor after all, the charismatic candidate we're all looking for, and the speech went over pretty flat.
It did. It was flat. It was in California, Orange County, California, and it was not a great uplifting Reagan-esque kind of speech. And I think a lot of Republicans are expecting something, a Ronald Reagan type, to come out of the Fred Thompson candidacy. And I'm not sure that's going to happen. Fred Thompson is 65 years old. He's been out of elective politics since he left the Senate, you know, 5-6 years ago. But at the same time, again, there's a lot. The candidates who are there now leave a lot of them wanting.
What happens to all those Law and Order episodes? Can they keep still rerunning them with him as the district attorney if he's running for president?
No, they would take him off, just like when Arnold Schwarzenegger announced in 2003 that he was running for governor in that recall election. Sad to say, all those Arnold movies left the California TV stations.
So the big loser in all this is Dick Wolf, the producer of Law and Order.
Exactly.
The president signed the new Iraq spending bill last week and got most of what he wanted, including no mention of a timetable for withdrawal. Is this a clear victory for the White House?
Well, some anti-war Democrats think so. Many anti-war Democrats feel that the Democratic establishment in Congress caved, that they gave exactly what President Bush wanted, and that was a funding bill with no set timetable for withdrawal of troops. The reality, of course, is that the Democrats did not have votes to override a veto, and as long as the Republican Party stayed united behind the president, they were not going to win. Now, how long they stay united, how long the Republicans stay united is an open question. When this issue comes up again in September, there are a lot of Democrats who feel that, yes, we did give in this time. We let the president have his day. But at the end of September, when the funding bill comes up again, we, the Democrats, suspect that the Republicans will not be as united.
Well, at least one political group, MoveOn.org, is promising consequences for those Democrats who did not actively try to stop this bill going through, Republicans and Democrats alike, we should say. Eli Pariser is executive director of MoveOn.org, and he joins us now on the line from Portland, Maine. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Good afternoon.
And you've promised to hold members of Congress from both parties accountable for the Iraq spending bill. And what does that mean exactly?
Well, it means basically looking at the Democrats and the Republicans who voted for this blank check for the president, and trying to make them listen to their constituents, who generally favor a pretty quick, a responsible but pretty quick exit from Iraq. And so, getting out on the ground in these districts, organizing meetings, organizing events, getting people contacting their members of Congress, so that they come into true with where most people are.
Is this to try to get their vote against this the next time around, or is this a veiled threat to say, look, if you don't vote for this, we're going to organize maybe another candidate to go against you in the primaries?
Well, I think for our members, you know, they worked really hard in 2006 to elect this Democratic Congress, and they did so because, you know, the promise, the mandate, was that the Democrats were going to lead us out of the mess in Iraq. I think they've made some good steps in that direction, but it was a big disappointment to see them giving President Bush another blank check for the war. And so it's really trying to hold them to that mandate that they ran on to end the war. And, you know, the political wind's blowing in the right direction. Most people in the country agree that that's the responsible thing to do. It's just a matter of getting the folks in Washington to listen.
And what do you do about somebody like the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, who voted against this bill, but on the other hand, she was the one who facilitated it?
Right. I mean, it's a difficult situation, but we're not, we're not very happy with Democrats giving President Bush everything that he wanted when he's the least popular president since Richard Nixon, when he's 20, you know, in the 20s in the polls, and 70% of the American people oppose the war. You know, they should be holding out, and they should be making President Bush and his administration come to them. You know, that's the new political reality that we're in. And so, you know, I think the Democrats in some ways don't know how strong their position is, and we want to remind them that when they lead on ending the war, you know, people are behind them, and when they don't, people are going to be upset.
Eli, it's Ken Rudin here. You've liberal groups have already announced that they're targeting people like Norm Coleman of Minnesota, Republican senator, and Republican senator Susan Collins of Maine. Are there any Democrats who are on a possible potential list of people you might challenge? I mean, Mary Landrieu, Joe Biden voted for this bill, and he's running for president. Is there a move on effort against these Democrats?
Well, you know, right now we're focused on winning them over and trying to make sure that they follow the rest of the caucus. I think that's the first step. But yeah, we don't consider it out of the question that if Democrats are standing in the way of ending the war, that you would find other candidates who wouldn't be. You're right, though, that the Republicans are certainly a major focus, and that's because at the end of the day, as the other commentator pointed out, they are the people standing with President Bush and denying. And making the possibility of a veto override remote, and so I think it's important. You know, we're unhappy with Democrats because their districts are especially concerned about the war, but ultimately the Republicans are also going to have to take responsibility for leading the country out of this mess, and right now they're not.
Mm-hmm. One of your big success stories of 2006 was the election of Jim Webb in Virginia, and yet he voted for this bill. I assume that was a big disappointment for you as well.
Well, yes. Yeah, some of the freshmen, Patrick Murphy, you know, a young Iraq vet in Pennsylvania, who was elected in a very narrow margin, voted no. Other of the freshmen voted yes. And, you know, for politics is a constant process, I think, of trying to keep the representatives rooted in America and not in the Washington D.C. bubble. We're seeing some of them succumb to those new kind of political realities in Washington, and others are staying true to their constituents. And the job of groups like Move On is to make sure that they do that, to make sure they're listening to real people as they make these decisions.
Let's get a caller on the line, and this is Roger. Roger calling us from San Antonio, Texas.
Oh, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I guess I kept scratching my head as to why the Democrats just didn't keep sending the bill back to President Bush and turn it around publicly and put pressure on the American public by doing campaigning, saying that, you know, put pressure on your Republican, you know, representatives to get enough people to vote through, and I mean, you know, for the veto. And even if they couldn't have gotten enough votes, why did they just keep submitting it back? Because eventually they would have hit a brick wall, at least the president would have, as far as the funding, and it would have been out.
And that was just the tactic that presidential candidate John Edwards was advocating. And I assume, Eli Pariser, you wonder that too.
Well, yeah. Again, as I said, you know, the Democrats are in a very strong political position. Sometimes in politics you have to make compromises between what you believe in and what's politically possible. But this actually isn't one of those cases. The public pretty overwhelmingly supports the Democrats' view. They want to see this Congress in the driver's seat, not President Bush. And so it is kind of puzzling as to what happened. And I can only imagine that that these last 6 years in the minority have changed the way that Democrats think about their tactics for the worse.
Still minority, still minority mentality. Ken Rudin, when you heard from various Democrats about why they allowed this to go ahead and give the president what Mr. Pariser calls a blank check, so why did they?
Well, exactly that. Because apparently in the court of public opinion, President Bush has turned the issue into who's going to block the funding for the troops. And basically the White House argument seemed to have prevailed that if you vote against this bill, you're cutting off the funds for the troops who need it so badly. Now, as you say, John Edwards was trying to push it and just send it back to them, put the onus on the president. But apparently the White House argument won the day here.
Hmm. Neil, can I add one more thing?
Go ahead, Roger.
Yeah, I mean, I can see this turning around in September, where the Republicans easily could use this and put pressure on the president behind the scenes and start doing withdrawal. And it's going to look like the Republicans did it, not the Democrats.
Mm-hmm. And there was already a meeting in the White House with some influential Republicans from close districts, you know, and they met with the president saying how unpopular the war is in their districts. And I think, Eli Pariser, don't you agree that the way the battle is setting up, the political battle setting up for September, unless there's some extraordinary kind of progress, unless General Petraeus and Ryan Crocker, the U.S. ambassador, can come back with a rosy picture, it's going to be a very different vote next time around.
I think that's right. The momentum is on our side. I personally, understanding how President Bush deals with generals he disagrees with, and we all remember General Shinseki, who was basically fired after telling Congress the war was going to cost a lot. I would be surprised if General Petraeus is able to do a zero spin job on his report back. So I'm not optimistic that that after 6 years or 7 years of dissembling and misleading the public, that the Bush administration is all of a sudden going to give it to us straight about what a mess it is there. But I do think that the momentum is growing. And one thing I just want to address, this whole idea that this is about who's going to leave the troops in the field with no body armor or no bullets or something, is just a canard. It's an argument, but. Let's be clear. No one on any side of this fight has ever argued for leaving the troops without the things they need. The Democrats are arguing to fund a strategy that'll work, an exit strategy, and make sure that those stipulations are in place to keep the president under control.
Roger, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And Eli Pariser, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me on.
Eli Pariser, Executive Director of MoveOn.org, on The Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Ken Rudin, let's get back to another issue. Iraq is hardly the only divisive issue in Washington right now. Immigration compromise has its share of critics and supporters, critics on both sides of the aisle. Republicans seems to be taking most of the heat, though, from their constituents.
Well, that's what's so fascinating about these two issues, because Iraq was supposed to be the slam dunk for the Democratic Party, and yet you see them, as the conversation we just heard, many Democrats are talking about eating their own in the primaries next year. Same with Republicans. The Republicans have been really the strongest on immigration reform. Obviously, they've been wanting to put up walls and, less talk about amnesty. And yet, when you go back to the districts and the states, as we saw the last couple of days, Saxby Chambliss, the Republican senator of Georgia, was hardly booed at a Republican state convention because he talked about this compromise,
supporting this compromise bill.
Exactly, which President Bush supports. John Kyle, who's really engineered this compromise, has been booed back home as well. And as a matter of fact,
back in Arizona.
Right. And I believe he's also been booed by House Republicans, who think this is a no winner for them. It just is interesting that, again, this is an issue where Republicans once upon a time thought this would be in their benefit to have a strong stand about immigration, and yet it's coming back to haunt them. It was interesting, I thought, also to watch President Bush talk about these Republicans who are refusing to come over. President Bush, with 28%, who has very little support in the country, is almost talking to the Republican Party about what's best for them. It's kind of ironic, but in this case, I think the majority of the American people agree with him.
Here's an email from Steve in Beaver Dam, Arizona. It seems like the last 6 years has been a litany of scandals du jour in which each successive political contretemps, almost all of them Republican, pushes the last one off the front pages and down the memory hole. Last week, the world was abuzz with about Alberto Gonzalez and the Justice Department swirl. This week, nothing. Are we already done with the Justice Department and on to the next big thing?
Well, look, if it's one thing to say that, yes, we've gone past Alberto Gonzalez and President Bush has weathered the storm and his numbers are coming back up. But each succeeding scandal, each succeeding embarrassment, whether the American people stays focused on it or not, it is still bringing the president's numbers down. And that's only bad news for the Republican Party. And that's why in the earlier conversation we had, I suspect that more and more Republicans will think twice about the vote in September about Iraq because their reelection time is coming closer.
And there's also a vote scheduled, as I understand it, in June, a vote of no confidence on Alberto Gonzalez in the United States Senate.
Right. I mean, that's a political ploy. And I think, you know, I mean, Chuck Schumer and the Democrats would love to do that and embarrass the president. But again, there is no question that a lot of Republicans have gone to President Bush privately and said, look, this is a no winner for the Republican Party. You've got to do something. And so far, President Bush has shown no indication that there's any change about to happen at the Justice Department.
Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. You can read his Political Junkie column every week and download his podcast on our website, npr.org. You can listen to him every Wednesday on Talk of the Nation. Ken, thanks very much for being
with us. I love listening to myself every Wednesday.
This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.